Hello and welcome to the Dr. Nyman Show podcast. Today is Monday, December 7th, 2020. We have a lot to go over today in the SARS-CoV-2 pandemic and a lot of new information that has occurred over the weekend and just some current events that Dr. Nyman would like to go over. Dr. Nyman?
Okay, thanks, Ryan. Yeah, I thought I'd do a quick update on the weekend. As I mentioned before, the weekend data are typically suppressed. Not all the reporting sites are actually reporting on the weekend, and several of the states actually don't issue any updates on either Saturday or Sunday, and one or two will do it one day and not the other. So the numbers are traditionally down. The deaths are even lower, particularly on Sundays and Mondays, actually. And I think that has to do more with coroner reports and further characterizations of the deaths, which leads to a little bit of a delay, and the updates aren't really forthcoming on the weekend. So even states that do report cases frequently have markedly lower deaths, and it's not because people don't die on the weekend. It's just that the deaths really don't get updated as efficiently as they do during the week. Last Friday, we actually set a record, which was 225,000 cases, and close to the record on the deaths. It was 2662. Saturday, typically it's lower, but it wasn't that much lower. There were still 200,000 cases, and there were still over 2,200 deaths. It was lower yesterday. There are only 164,000 cases and a little above 1,100 deaths. But that's typical. And like I say, today the deaths will be down and the cases will come up a little bit. And I kind of get back to the a normal weekly or weekday report on Tuesday, and those traditionally go up through the end of the week, and generally Friday gives the highest numbers both for deaths as well as for cases. This week we'll probably start to see the effects of the Thanksgiving holiday travel or interactions. Takes a little while for cases, for people to actually be tested. There may have been an increase in the number of people being tested before the holiday just to ensure that they're not infected, and then there'd be an increase in testing afterwards. But in spite of those increases in testing, California, which is getting up above 20,000 cases a day, is seeing its positive rate also going up. It's above 10% now. Massachusetts, I believe, is above 20% positive. And so the numbers are going up. They're going up independent of the holiday right now. But the holiday increases will be reflected in today's or this week's data on cases and hospitalizations. And then it'll take another 2 or 3 weeks before the effects of the holiday on the death count will be evident. And then unfortunately, when those deaths start to be registered from Thanksgiving, there'll be new cases being registered from Christmas and New Year's and other assorted celebrations that lead to more interaction. And so those numbers will go up in January. So it really looks like The number of deaths is likely to get up to 500,000 by the end of February. And these numbers really won't be heavily impacted by the vaccine. The vaccine still hasn't been approved in the U.S. for emergency use. That meeting and vote is scheduled for this Friday for the Pfizer mRNA vaccine. The Moderna mRNA vaccine is slated for a week from Friday. Both have given effective rates in the neighborhood of 95%, so it seems likely that both will be approved. But it's not clear how well thought out the plans are for the distribution of these vaccines into actual patients. The group that's initially targeted are healthcare workers and long-term care patients. There's about 21 million healthcare workers and another 3 million long-term care patients. And exactly how those are going to be distributed is probably not that complex, that many of the healthcare workers will be vaccinated at their hospitals, at their place of work. And the long-term care, it seems there's contracts with CVS and Walgreens. I actually got an email yesterday from CVS looking for new hires. I said they were going to be hiring thousands of people to help administer the vaccines. So that's an indication that, you know, everything's really not in place yet, even for the highest group, highest priority group, that the long-term care facilities are still putting out ads for applications, and so they would have to go through the applications, decide on the hires, go through training for administering these, and then assignments to the various long-term care facilities throughout the country. So even at this date, where it looks likely that there will be an approval on Friday, and the reports that some of the vaccine is already shipped to appropriate locations for distribution, that it's not really clear that the agencies that are going to be involved with the long-term care facilities are really fully in place at this time. And there also seem to be delays on production of the vaccine. Originally, it was anticipated that Pfizer would have 20 million doses and Moderna would have 20 million. The Pfizer numbers have been scaled back. It sounds like for the month of December, instead of 20 million, there will only be 6 million because there was a shortage of some of the supplies and ingredients that go into the packaging and shipment of these vaccines. So it sounds like there'll be a delay on the manufacturing front. Whether there'll be some similar issues with Moderna isn't clear. They're really trailing by a week as far as getting a vote on the approval. And so since the vaccine requires two shots, even if Pfizer did produce 20 million and Moderna did 20 million, that would be 40 million shots, but that would still only cover 20 million patients, which is less than the 24 million that would be targeted for receipt of the first injections. And then as far as an effect on the incidence of cases, there is a 21-day gap between the first and second shot with Pfizer. There's a 28-day wait period between the shots for Moderna. And so even if people do start to get shots at the end of this month, they really won't get their second shot till the end of January, and that really won't take effect until mid-February or so. And for places like CVS, it sounds like they still have to get employees and hired and trained. And so it really sounds like getting the first shot in December will only apply to a subset of the 20 million shots. And so many of the 20 million shots won't be administered until January. And so they won't be fully vaccinated until the end of February. And that's why I say the impact of the vaccine on the incident of cases or the incident of hospitalization or the death toll will be largely minimized, and for the death toll will actually be totally unaffected because it takes about 2 to 4 weeks after patients are hospitalized before they actually die. So those that are hospitalized in February generally won't impact the death rate because they won't die until March. So the next several weeks, or months, I should say, are going to be the dark winter, so to speak, as it's been called, where these numbers will continue to go up. The number of cases approached 3,000 last week. There's a reasonable chance it'll hit 3,000 this week per day. And if it doesn't do that by the end of this week, it'll almost certainly get to 3,000 next week. And it's likely that those numbers will continue to increase. There are predictions that there'll be 4,000 or 5,000 cases or deaths per day. And so that would translate, 5,000 a day would translate to, 25,000 a week or so, 100,000 deaths a month. And that's how the number will go from the 280,000 deaths today to over 500,000 deaths by the end of February. So the situation is not looking good on that front. It's being exacerbated by holiday parties. I think the White House just had a holiday party on Friday, and there's something like 50 that are scheduled between now and the end of the year, which is, frankly, the end of this month. And Pompeo apparently has sent out 900 invitations for another holiday party. So the administration is actively ignoring the pandemic and endangering more and more lives to get infected at these parties, which will become super spreader events. And then they'll fan out and create more cases. Small gatherings seems to be the primary means of spread right now, and not only is the administration not set a good example, they are exacerbating the situation, and that would be not a model of behavior they're behavior would represent negligence at best and manslaughter at worst. And it would be useful if the District of Columbia would just crack down on these White House parties and tell them they're in violation of the regulations and basically do something proactive to reduce the spread. The other thing I want to talk about was the actual creation of the vaccine. There's quite a bit of misinformation regarding how long this would normally take and how dramatic the vaccine creation speed was, inciting warp speed as a major factor. The warp speed in the case of Pfizer really only impacted the early creation of the vaccine prior to approval. I mean, the government said that they would buy the vaccine even if it wasn't approved, and that took the risk out of scaling up the vaccine production, which all of the leading candidates, well, there were six that were chosen in the U.S., two messenger RNA, two adenovirus, and two recombinant approaches. And in those cases, they did, the U.S. government, the warp speed did guarantee that for those six companies, they would buy the vaccine, even if the vaccine wasn't approved. In addition, for a couple of companies like Moderna and Johnson & Johnson, there was some funding that also supported the clinical trials, so the clinical trials could run fairly quickly. But as far as, citing that it normally takes 4 or 5 years for a vaccine, well, that's what it used to take, but that's one of the reasons these companies develop various platforms. And the platforms are designed so they've already got the mechanism for the creation of the vaccine. All they have to do is substitute the appropriate target into their platform and then run with it, essentially. Go and do some initial work and then start phase one trials, then go to phase three trials. And so it's pretty straightforward. The interest in the coronavirus really began 17 years ago with the initial outbreak, which was an epidemic, wasn't a pandemic. And the international spread was largely due to one physician who had been treating patients in Guangdong province and came to Hong Kong for a wedding and stayed at the Metropole Hotel, where he infected other guests that were there, who then flew out of Hong Kong and spread the virus to Toronto, Hanoi, and Singapore, as well as others that spread it in Hong Kong. And that was contained. The numbers were dwarfed. The numbers being reported now for that entire epidemic, there were 7,700 cases. The case definition was a little bit more strict. It was, it did require that the patient be hospitalized and have pneumonia in addition to having the virus. But there were only 7,700 that met that definition. There were 700 deaths. Those numbers are much higher per state per day. In the, not necessarily per day, per week, I guess, in the United States. And for a single state can generate 7,000 cases in a day, and the 700 deaths might take a week, but they are nothing like the epidemic. So there's a big difference between an epidemic and a pandemic. The pandemic is clearly out of control worldwide, and especially in the U.S., which lead the world both in cases as well as deaths. The U.S. has about 4% of the world's population and 20% of the world's cases and deaths. Now, the high concentration does allow for the clinical trials to move more quickly because the way the trials are conducted, half of the patients get a placebo and half get the vaccine. And then when those that are enrolled develop the disease, COVID, and are test positive, then when they get to a threshold, in this case it was around 100 cases, once they had 100 cases, then they looked at, decoded the patients to find out who had received the placebo and who had received the vaccine, and 94-95% of those that were positive had received a placebo. That's how the determination of a 95% effective rate was determined. But as far as the speed is concerned, the 2009 pandemic had a similar situation. In that case, the platform was really the virus itself and its ability to reassort, and there was a standard virus that's used for the various flu vaccines called PR8. It's a virus that was isolated in 1934 in Puerto Rico, and that virus is mixed with the current strain that the vaccine's directed against, and then they select a reassort and discuss six of the segments from the 1934 virus, as well as the H and the N from the current target, and then that virus is grown up, killed, and injected into patients for the new vaccine. So that was done with the swine flu in 2009. If you recall, that virus was first isolated in the spring, and it was first identified in two children in Southern California. It was subsequently identified in Mexico as well as Canada, and it spread in the United States was largely tied to people who had gone down to Mexico to vacation for spring break, and then came back, and many of these were students, and that they then spread the virus to their schools. And that's how it was identified. And so it became a target in something like March or April of 2009. And the vaccine was ready, at least for the initial vaccinations, in December of that year. So it it took less than a year, and they started in March. The current vaccine really began when the sequence was released from China. There were rumors of an atypical pneumonia in, associated with a seafood market in Wuhan in mid December. There was actually, it wasn't clear what it was. Some of the rumors said that it was a coronavirus. But then at the end of the year, there was a 4% coverage since the virus has about 30,000 nucleotides. That means about 1,200 nucleotides had been identified in the virus, and that confirmed that it really was a beta coronavirus. It was closely related to the SARS virus from 17 years earlier. And then that full sequence, all 30,000 positions, was released publicly on January 8th. And since these various labs had platforms, they just needed a sequence to be able to select a target. They all selected the same target, which is a spike protein. And I just had to incorporate the sequence for the spike protein into their platform, and they had the immunogen. They had what they were going to actually vaccinate the people with, the patients with. And they could do some preliminary studies and then start phase one trials. And so it was kind of the same as 2009. Once you had a platform, if you had a new sequence, you could put that sequence into the platform. That's the whole idea of the platform. You'll know how the platform expresses the protein, which is then recognized by the immune system of the patient. And then it's just a matter of recruiting the patients and monitoring them for adverse effects and eventually for efficacy on how well it protects relative to other patients that are age and gender matched and genetic background match, so that they can compare those that received the vaccine with those that had the placebo. So in any event, the numbers that have been cited have just been wrong. I mean, it's pretty easy to do the math that the creation of a vaccine really began in January when the sequence was released on January 8th. In the U.S., the earliest there's going to be an approval for use is going to be on Friday, which is the 10th, and that's 11 months. So it took 11 months to basically go from the sequence to actually getting an approval. And it was cited in media reports as taking 9 months, and then the president said it took 7 months, and then same broadcast that it took 9 months, then just changed it and said it took 6 months. But it really took 11 months. 11 months isn't that unusual once you have the platform in place. Like I said, it took something like 9 months to do the swine flu pandemic. And there's actually been vaccines made using the platform with the adenovirus that was made for Ebola. So an approved vaccine has already been created using that platform. And the difference is it's just a different target. It's actually the same gene that's used in Ebola. It's the envelope protein that is used for the virus to get into the cell. And that's the same, functionally the same as the spike protein, which was used in the COVID vaccine. So for a company like Pfizer, the warp speed just allowed them to scale up, but even that scale up seems to have fallen short. They ran out of materials, and instead of having 20 million cases to get the ball rolling, once it's approved, they're only going to have 6 million doses, which would only cover 3 million patients when they've already identified 24 million that are first in line to be vaccinated. So the bottom line is that the vaccines will be rolled out. They won't be rolled out quite as fast as anticipated in December. They'll pick up speed in January. Those that get their first shot in January aren't going to be fully vaccinated until March. And they'll go through this first set before those additional patients can be vaccinated that aren't first responders or healthcare workers or long-term care facility patients. And in the meantime, the numbers are going up dramatically, and it is anticipated that the death toll will exceed 500,000 Americans by the end of February, and it'll probably be approaching 400,000 deaths about the time of the inauguration. So that's kind of where things stand this week. We'll be doing some updates to see the impact of the Thanksgiving holiday. And unfortunately, that'll be followed by another wave due to Christmas, New Year's holidays. And therefore, the number of cases will continue to rise in December, January, and February with some benefit in caseloads being evident maybe by the end of February. So that's what we have for now.
All right, thank you. Listeners, please always go to overcomics.co for the latest information. We will be doing more of these as the situation unfolds this week and the weeks, months to come. Thanks for listening.